Litman Crooks.
Hello again, everybody, and welcome to the Litman Crooks podcast series. I'm your host, Bernie Crooks, from the law firm Litman Crooks, and Happy New Year to everybody on the first week of January 2015. Today, our guests are from SAGE, Services and Advocacy for Gay, Lesbian, Bisexual, and Transgender Elders, and we have Hillary Meyer, the Director of National Programs. Hillary, welcome.
Thank you. Nice to be here.
And Catherine Thurston, the Senior Director of Services and Training. Catherine, welcome.
Thank you so much.
So I guess, Hillary, we'll start with you. Why don't you tell listeners about SAGE and what its mission is and how it got started?
Sure. So SAGE is based in New York City, but we're now a national organization. Our mission is to improve the lives of LGBT older adults across the country. SAGE was founded in 1978, so we've got quite a bit of history under our belt. In fact, we are the oldest and largest organization serving LGBT older adults. We work in a variety of capacities with LGBT seniors.
Now, seniors have interesting and different, unique issues as they age. For example, their estate planning needs are different, planning for long-term care and other issues. And society is now starting to recognize that these folks ought to be entitled to the same benefits as other individuals. So what does SAGE do to help elders who are in this situation help meet them meet the objectives that they are trying to accomplish?
Well, SAGE is an interesting mix of both direct services, training, and advocacy. So we work in a variety of capacities, both providing care management, legal services, and other sorts of social support, as well as doing federal policy advocacy and working with providers, actually, who are working with LGBT older adults to help them understand how best to work with our population.
And are some of those providers lawyers?
Yes, some of those providers are lawyers.
So how does SAGE in particular work with lawyers to help further our goals here?
Well, actually, we have a pretty interesting legal clinic that I'll let Catherine jump in and talk about in New York City. Catherine?
Sure. So as Hillary mentioned, SAGE is both a local service, direct service, and a national policy organization. In New York City, SAGE operates the nation's first LGBT senior center, which serves about 2,000 people at any given time. And part of our services are a pro bono legal clinic that was established about 10 years ago with a collective of attorneys who wanted to give back and wanted to serve LGBT older adults. And that clinic operates twice a week at SAGE. One clinic is by appointment and one clinic is drop-in. And we serve really thousands of people throughout the year at those pro bono legal clinics. In addition, we have special legal programs throughout the year, both focused on constituents themselves. For example, as part of National Healthcare Decision-Making Day, we have an Advanced Directives and a Wills Clinic that operates throughout New York City. And then we have opportunities for attorneys themselves through SAGE's collection of, again, LGBT identified attorneys who want to give back, and we've had CLE classes at SAGE, etc. So we really, our legal services span not just constituents, but attorneys who are interested in learning more about working with LGBT older adults.
And are the services you provide in New York City different than from across the country? Because I know you've got chapters outside of New York.
We do, and I'm going to let Hillary answer the question about our local affiliate model, about our affiliate model, but our local services are, you know, what we like to say is that New York City is the incubator for programs that happen across the country because we are the largest chapter. We are the main site. And so, for example, our senior center, which is located in Midtown, serves about 2,000 people, but we have just opened and are in the process of opening centers across New York City. So we've opened a new center in Harlem. We're opening a SAGE center in the Bronx next week. We've opened a SAGE center on Staten Island. So what we do here is we create programs that are larger in scale, and then our goal is to replicate pieces of those programs in our work across the country.
Okay, so how do we do that, Hillary?
Well, there's both the local service provision as well as the policy and advocacy pieces that we do. We work on federal, state, and local policy initiatives that then, of course, have tremendous effects on LGBT people across the country. And across the country, there are direct services that are happening in each of our chapters. We have 27 chapters that are located in 20 states in the District of Columbia, and each do provide slightly different services and programming. There's some variety there, but all are collectively advancing the mission of SAGE and making the improvements both on a local level as well as pushing some state-level agendas.
Now, it certainly sounds like there's tremendous demand and growth and expansion here in the New York metropolitan area, but nationwide, is there the demand that would necessitate additional SAGE chapters across the country?
There certainly are. In fact, we've recently had to put a hold on new SAGE chapters because of the tremendous growth. And so at this point, we are focusing on the 27 chapters that we have and considering in the next couple of years growing that further. But there are definitely more chapters that would like to exist than are currently able to.
And if a new chapter wants to open up shop, so to speak, do they need to coordinate through the national organization?
They do. So they work with our SageNet director, who is in charge of all of the chapters. And the first step is to put in a letter of interest, and then there's a number of different fulfillments that groups would have to reach to become a SAGE chapter.
And the benefit to them of becoming a SAGE chapter as opposed to just doing it on their own is what?
Well, they receive a tremendous amount of technical assistance from SAGE. As Catherine mentioned, they are able to benefit from replicating the programs that have already been piloted and proven effective in the New York City area. And they also are able to affiliate with a very strong organization with SAGE National, in that they receive a number of different infrastructure services that can be of help with smaller nonprofits.
And the population that you serve, how do you define an elder?
I'm happy to step in on that one. So that's a great question, Bernard, because there are many definitions, not just at SAGE, but in the mainstream aging network about how to define an elder. In general, when it comes to direct services that are funded through the Older Americans Act, the age is 60 and older. SAGE made a decision more than 10 years ago, about 15 years ago actually, to serve anyone who was HIV positive or had AIDS at the age of 50 and over. And that was a decision made because many people with HIV in their 50s did not feel welcomed in programs where they felt that they were viewed as older, or where they weren't necessarily comfortable with being out as LGBT, because at that time the population mix in HIV programming was very, very different. So we made that decision that even though we might not get reimbursed for the services we were offering, that would be the age at which people could start to come to SAGE. And then we also have a program at SAGE, which Hillary actually manages, which is called SAGE Works, and it is a workforce development program and a job readiness program. And in that case, we decided that 40 and over was the age at which people could start to utilize our program, since that is at 40 is when age-based discrimination is identified as the age cutoff in the workplace. And then the last example of age, which is really the most expansive, is that SAGE has operated for the last 12 years a caregiver support program called SAGECAP, which stands for Caring and Preparing. And the way we define eligibility into that program is that someone has to be over 60 and someone has to be LGBT in the caregiving pair. But it can be any combination. So it can be a 40-year-old lesbian taking care of her mom, who may not be a lesbian, a straight-identified parent. It can be an 85-year-old couple taking care of each other. And we've certainly seen in the LGBT community people who are neighbors stepping in to become the caregiver for an older LGBT adult. So the age range is much more expansive in that situation.
So now that you've officially characterized me as an elder, under your broad definition. Tell me about the caregiving aspect. I know caregiving is a tremendous burden, and many people underestimate what the toll can be on the caregiver until they actually go through it. What's different in caring in the LGBT situation than in the more traditional situation?
Right. That's a great question. As you say, caregiving is an enormous burden nationally. And for people all over this country. What's different for LGBT people and LGBT older adults is a variety of things. One is that LGBT older adults are four times less likely to have children in their lives, four times less likely than heterosexual older adults. And that's an enormously important figure when you think about caregiving, because adult children are the number one source of family caregiving support in the United States. So many, many LGBT older adults are bereft of that support. They're also twice as likely to be living and aging alone than their heterosexual counterparts. And that, for anyone who's worked with older adults, knows that older adults, regardless of sexual orientation, are often living alone. So the profundity of the isolation in the LGBT aging community really can't be, highlighted enough. In addition to those, two pretty important statistics, a lifetime of discrimination and of persecution has led many LGBT older people to go back into the closet when faced with caregiving situations, whether it's having to place somebody in a nursing home or whether it's having in-home care placed in the house. We've seen over and over again at Sage, and I've been at Sage for 10 years, and I can say that there are so many cases of our older adults who basically pretend that their longtime partner is their roommate or that their partner is their sister when placed in a residential facility. So what you have is a situation in which people can't even reach out to get the help that they need in the most difficult time of their life as caregivers because of their fear of being mistreated.
So while society certainly has come a long way in the last generation or so, it sounds like there's still a long way to go.
I think that's right, and I think, again, there have been enormous social changes made in the last 5 years, in the last year, in the last 24 hours, when you think about Florida and marriage.
Yeah.
It feels like every day there's some new, wonderful thing to celebrate, but for older adults, many of whom came of age in an era in which none of this was even conceivable, their fear and the reality of their existence up until now has made their lives very, very difficult and has made them very vulnerable and much less likely to reach out for help and to accept help from an organization that they don't think is a competent one.
One of the things that people fail to realize until they confront it is that LGBT population has some unique legal challenges that are really different from heterosexual couples. Do you have a couple minutes to go into what some of those issues are?
Of course. Of course. And I'll begin with what I know at the local level, and if Hillary has anything to add, she can absolutely jump in. So as you say, many issues that LGBT older adults struggle with when it comes to legal issues and challenges are universal. But there are also, there's an overlay of challenges because of their LGBT status. So for example, the importance of legal protection such as healthcare proxies and wills is so much more important. And let me just take a step back and mention the caregiving program that I alluded to earlier. The reason why that program is called Caring and Preparing is because that really has a bifurcated approach in that for LGBT caregivers, of course, they need help in taking care of the people that they love, but because of the unique situations that LGBT people experience legally, financially, and in other ways, the need to take care of your own, get your own house in order, and make sure that all the legal protections and the physical protections that are available to you in the state in which you live are yours, and you have done your due diligence in looking into that, is a huge part of getting LGBT people ready to age themselves. So so that getting, you know, what we've often said to our caregiving clients is that your aging future may not look the way your parents did. Many, many people, people who are very educated, people who are out in the world, are shocked to hear that if their partner dies, that they're not eligible for their Social Security survivor benefit. Many people don't even understand the importance of having a named healthcare proxy because they feel that just having their partner there in the hospital will be enough. So being very explicit in our education with our constituency about the importance of having, again, all their documents in order, the importance of estate planning for the LGBT community, the importance of seeing people, of talking to lawyers locally, because, again, every state has a very different situation. It's something that we stress locally and nationally, and I think the educational piece of the work that we do is something that is done at the national level with every affiliate. And if I just can get a little bit more specific about some of the legal problems that we see, we do surveys frequently of our constituency to see what the legal issues are that they're bringing with them to our pro bono legal clinic that I mentioned earlier. And again, what we see frequently in the folks that we serve directly are debtor-creditor issues. You know, one thing I'll add, just a sort of historical point here, is that for many gay and bisexual men who were diagnosed with HIV 25, 30, 35 years ago, at a time when their future seemed very, very bleak, many people made financial choices at that time thinking that they had a shorter lifespan. They may have cashed in their life insurance policies and done other things because they did not think that they would be retiring and that they would need money to retire on. So we have a large population of people who are living on very, very low income with almost no savings. So, again, debtor-creditor issues are common. Evictions are common, both holdover and for lack of payment. Other landlord-tenant situations because of the situation in New York City with real estate, when older adults are living in prime apartments and a partner dies and they're not legally married or they're not married, and the issue of succession comes into play. That is one of the most common things that our attorneys get asked by our clients when they have pro bono legal clinics. So that's just, you know, an example of some of the issues that our LGBT older adults bring to the table when they come to meet with our attorneys.
Yeah, I think in general, getting folks to understand the importance of doing their estate and financial planning is an enormous challenge. And certainly for the folks you serve, it really has some added dimensions. And I want to thank you for providing the services that you provide and continuing the education process, because I think that's what it's going to take to get where we need to be. You got to keep pounding the pavement and getting the word out there. So I want to thank you, Catherine Thurston and Hillary Meyer, for being on the show today.
Thank you, Bernard.
And if you want to just give us your website and contact information for our listeners?
Sure. So SAGE is www.sageusa.org.
And is that the best way for people to learn about your organization?
That is. You can also reach us through the National Resource Center, which is www.lgbtagingcenter.org.
Fantastic. Thank you very much for being on the show, and have a great day.
Thank you.